Chapter 33. Ron and Celeste crowded into the meeting at St. John's Episcopal Church. It was Friday night, and the room was packed. The Lambeth Conference had only recently occurred, and many thought that Bishop Spong would be silenced by the rebuke that he had received. Spong thanked everyone who came. Ron was tired, but he listened intently. He had made it through the week. 2 more days of school, and they would be on vacation. Spong began. "When we define God as being all-knowing and omniscient, we are not talking about Jesus Christ, whose birth we are about to commemorate. Jesus never actually says in the Bible that he is God. I believe that this is actually somewhat of a miracle, considering how little of the New Testament words were actually spoken by the historical Jesus." Spong paused. "In fact, no words spoken by Jesus actually appear until he has been dead for more than 20 years. Then his words are somewhat shaped by the political beliefs of ensuing centuries. The version of the birth of Jesus, as it is told in Matthew and Luke, was an attempt to refute the assertion that Jesus was illegitimate. I would urge you to not blindly subscribe to the misrepresented version of the birth of Jesus. On one hand, it shows disdain for the human act of reproduction, treating it as a sullied business, too common and base to be ascribed to God. On the other hand, it gives the impression that Jesus was God himself. Jesus never saw himself as an almighty creator. I believe that we should be offended by this notion. What I do believe is that in Jesus we see the essence of what we have come to know as godness." When he had finished some 40 minutes later, Ron was convinced that he had just heard the most acceptable theory of Christianity that he had ever heard. He was very quiet and accompanied Celeste over to see Jack Spong. Jack recognized Celeste and thanked her warmly for driving down to listen to him. Celeste introduced him to Ron, who just shook hands and said, "I find myself amazed by your lecture." Spong smiled and thanked him, and then Ron was lost in thought as Jack and Celeste chatted for a moment about when he would again be at St. Peter's. On the drive home, Ron said, "I understand why he has your attention." "He was just wonderful," said Celeste. Ron felt his imagination and his spirit touched by the words of Spong, and he would have walked, if not on water, over glass, to have a chance to really have a conversation with him. He told Celeste, and she smiled and said, "Right now he's a very busy man." "I'm certain that's true," said Ron, with a slightly dreamy-eyed smile. When they got home, they found Angel playing with Keats. Ron had suspected that Angel only put up her dismissive attitude and complaining nature about the puppy for their benefit. "Surprised to find you home," said Ron. "No one goes out before 10 o'clock, Dad." Ron stopped her outside on her way to the barn. "Can you leave Sunday night free? I'd like to take you and your mother to the manor to celebrate her birthday." "Sure, Dad," said Angel. "Do you have money to buy her a gift?" said Ron. "I've had her gift for weeks, Dad. I don't need you to give me money for my mother's gifts anymore." "Hey, you're in school. Your money is tight." "I know, Dad. You're always willing to give me money, except When I really need something, you are nowhere to be found, snapped Angel. But I can count on you for Sunday. I already said yes, Dad. I'm going out, and it's cold standing out here, looking like two fools.